Hi, and welcome to another edition of Visions with me, Yudalee Wickham Ashby. And today, as we continue to think liberating thoughts, as we focus on how can we strengthen ourselves and how can we really give support to individuals with disabilities and, of course, the families with members who have disabilities, I want to share with you two excerpts. The first one from Loretta Claiborne, a young lady who has matured. She has an intellectual disability, and actually a movie was made sharing her life story. She was born with a disability. Her mother fought fearlessly for her to be educated and to really ensure that she can live a good quality life. So here she is speaking, and I hope that you, the individuals with the disabilities, you, the parents of whether it's young or adult children with disabilities, and of course you, the neighbors and co-workers, all of you who live on this island, take lessons from what Ms. Claiborne is sharing with us today.
I'm happy to be here to talk to you. I'm going to talk about the plightness of people with intellectual disability. But before that, I'm going to talk about a little bit about my life. When my mother had me, I was born intellectually challenged. And we talk about fearlessness. Well, my mother, she didn't fear anything. She had 7 children. And of course, when I came, she was told, you know, this one you're going to have to institutionalize. It probably won't live that long. And of course, my mom read the spiel and she said, don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me what to do. I'll raise my children. Well, my mother had dreams and hopes just like every other mother. She wanted me to grow up like her other 6 siblings who were living, 2 deceased, and 1 adopted, which would have made 10 children. But she wanted me to grow up and go to school. And her dream was for me to graduate from high school. Like any other child, I had dreams. I wanted to be an athlete. I wanted to be a nurse. And I wanted to be a veterinarian. Well, 2 of my dreams I knew wasn't going to happen because of all the naysays that came around. You're not going to do this. You're not going to graduate from high school. You're in a segregated class. I was segregated outside on the playground. I heard a man talk about earlier about playgrounds for everyone, inclusionary playgrounds. Well, when it comes to a child who is intellectually challenged, there's not much of a playground for them but to be bullied and teased and be the teeter ball of everybody's joke. Well, as time went by, my mom's dreams were fulfilled. I graduated from high school, but I was still living a violent, angry life. I can remember going to the dentist with my sisters and brothers. And she took all 5 of us girls, and the dentist would look at 4 of them and said, oh, yes, when you got to me, oh, we can't treat her. You need to take her to the clinic. Of course, my mom, being the broad person she was, she didn't take no slack from nobody. But, of course, sometimes she fell. And there was a time when I was going to be institutionalized. The 2 schools that I was going to go to are now closed. And she was pro-adamant that her child is going to be educated in the same school system that her other 6 children who are living. You got a special education class here, you're going to educate my child. My mom was fearless, and you had to be fearless of her. You couldn't be fearless for her, because she was big. And when she talked, she was like E.F. Hutton. She didn't take no backslack from nobody. And when she said, be quiet, shut up, she meant it. She could pick you out of a crowd. Talk about being fearless. This woman was fearless. She was fearless in the community, and she was fearless for her 7 young children, even though she had welfare, even though there wasn't much food. But she met what she met, and she met for her children to be their best. Of course, I'm living with anger, taking a lot of psychotropic drugs. It was coming time for me to branch out. I was going to a workshop when a man approached me and says, you know, there's a program called Special Olympics. I didn't speak. And no, I didn't use sign language. And I remember him saying to me, we want you to come out for this program. And of course, me and myself, mean, angry, all I looked like was like this. I could care less because I know it's the bread and the joke. I got into Special Olympics, a free program. Of course, it offered sports and training competition. At the time they used this word is not to be used now for the retarded. Now we use terms like people who have intellectual disabilities. When I first got into Special Olympics, it was one day. Now it's all year. 180 countries. It's providing more than sport. It's providing something that I was denied, health care. Just a month ago, I was up at the Clinton Global Initiative to speak about people being denied a health care who have intellectual disability. Of course, people come to the platform with about people, how they're treated. There's not enough food, clean water. You know the logistics of what people came, but for the first time, somebody with an intellectual disability was able to get up and speak to the world about people who have the needs and the disparity of health care for people with intellectual disability. Rise up, folks. It's happening here in the U.S. of A. that people are still being denied. And when I think about being fearless, today, when I get out there and fight, I'm fearless. I didn't think I was able to get back. I was told that what I wasn't going to be. There was supposed to be a gentleman here today, Mr. Tim Shriver, was supposed to speak on fearlessness, and he says, I'm not the person to speak. Loretta, you are. And I never thought I could be fearless. Yes, I do fear still today. I do fear the future, because I know right in this country, healthcare for the regular population, how we are challenging to get decent health care. So, yes, I am growing older, and I do have fears, just like everyone else, about how I'm going to be treated and how people with intellectual disabilities around this country and around the world is going to be treated. Because if we don't have good health care, we have nothing. You can have all you want in this world. You can have the best of food. But if you don't have good health and care for yourself, we don't have humanity. And now when I look at Special Olympics, I'll always think back. Why would somebody like Miss Eunice Kennedy Shriver, who came from a prominent family, think about somebody who was intellectually challenged? Yes, she had a sister that was intellectually challenged, but she went beyond that in 1968 when she knocked on the gates. And she says, you know what? I'm going to take my chance. In 1962, she had a camp in the yard. Society told her, no, those people don't belong. People like me belonged in institutions, warehouse, for a crime we didn't commit, basically prison. And here was a woman who stood out. And I always wanted to ask her. We were great, great friends. And I never got to ask her this question. Eunice, did you ever fear of what people would think of you doing something for a population of people who are not supposed to be thought of? I wished I would have had the chance to ask that question to her, and I didn't. I had to rely on faith. I had to rely on being fearless, and for me to be fearless for people with intellectual disability, I had to trust in my faith, trust in my faith in others, trust in my faith in good people in my life. And yes, when I think about Mrs. Shriver, she took a chance and she wasn't afraid. She wasn't afraid to be fearless no matter what stepped in front of her. And that's the way I feel today. I'm not afraid to be fearless, whether it's going up against the President of the United States or talking to Congress or talking to Senate. People ask me all the time, Loretta, aren't you afraid of that? I said, no, I guess this is the job God gave me to do. When I look back at my life, I was supposed to be feared. But today, I look at my life and I look at so many lives, so many people being involved with people with intellectual disability. And when I look at Special Olympics today, I think about unified sports where people with regular abilities come into the school or into the community and play with people with intellectual disability. I look at Project Unified where we come in and talk young people in schools where they are being bullied with intellectual disabilities and regular abilities talking about just their own issues. Last January, I heard a principal with tears talking to me. He said, "Loretta, since we started Project Unified with our regular students come in and talk to the students with special needs, we had one girl that wouldn't come to school anymore. And because of that, today bullying has went down 60% in our school." 60%. Bullying's a big issue. So today when I look and see what Special Olympics is doing, whether it's healthcare, whether it's people to be in the community, whether it's for a child to play on the park, whether it's for somebody to get their own apartment, to advocate, to be fearless, I have to have something in my mind and beside me. I put my strength and I put my faith in God that I can be fearless on behalf of Eunice, on behalf of Special Olympics, on behalf of all people with intellectual disability. So when I look around that one day, I won't have to have a job to fight. I won't have to be fearless that one day I'll be able to walk down the street and look at this person and think of them as a person instead of a person with an intellectual disability, as a person to be a part of your community, of my community. Being fearless is hard. And I'll be the first one to tell you about it, because I don't know what it is not to be fearful. I've always grown up to be fearful. Fearful of what life is going to give me. Fearful of what's going to happen in the future. But now today, I'm proud to say that I am fearless, not for Loretta, but for the world of all people. So I would like to thank each and every one of you here, and that I hope you will go home. If you fear something today, keep your faith. Keep faith in yourself. Keep faith in what you believe, and you can be fearless. Thank you so much.
So, as you heard from Loretta Claiborne, let that fear turn into a fierceness that will allow you to stand firm and really advocate for positive change as we all seek to improve the standard of living for ourselves, our families, our friends, our co-workers, our fellow citizens. Now, the next clip is from Stephanie Thomas, a young lady who has sought to do something positive, make a positive change and influence on how persons with disabilities look in their clothes, as well as how to make them very accessible to persons with different types of disabilities. So listen to her as she speaks about fashion and style for persons with disabilities.
When most people think of a person with a disability, very rarely do they think of me. But I was born with one thumb on right hand, three toes on one foot, and four on the other. Unless you're barefoot with me in a hot yoga or modern dance class, you would have no idea that I live with what is often referred to as a non-severe disability. But guys, it's actually kind of cool. It's like I'm this undercover agent living in two worlds, and I get to see life from these two different sides. One, where I'm labeled normal, whatever that is. Another, where I'm labeled less than, or sometimes even different. It's really interesting, though, because this is my favorite part about being me, because it's the part that informs how I see and think about people with disabilities and how we live and how we dress. My life's work is disability fashion styling. How to take styling and content creation in order to change negative perceptions of people with disabilities. Usually the first question I get is, okay, disability fashion styling, what exactly is that? It just describes how I dress someone with a disability. Usually the next follow-up question is, okay, well, what's the difference? This one I can show you better than I can tell you, so if you're able to stand on your own with no problems, can you do me a favor and just stand up, please? Oh, you're awesome, yay! Okay, thank you, you may be seated. All right, so what's the first thing you did when you stood up? Did you shift your pants? Maybe did you shift your shirt or your jacket? Did you do anything like that? Well, for someone who sits all the time and maybe uses a wheelchair for mobility, these are things that they have to deal with. So when I'm disability fashion styling, when I'm working with someone who's a wheelchair user, these are things I keep in mind. I make sure that the back of the pants are higher than the front because why? You want to have modesty when you're sitting and transporting, like from the car or the couch. Someone who has a seated body type and is using that wheelchair, you may not know this, but people are literally dying to be beautiful because those little rivets and those thick seams and back pockets can cause deadly body sores. So those have got to go. In addition to that, the pockets that are really cool that you have on your hips that work really well when you're standing, not so much when you're sitting. So we have to make sure that those are lower for even more access. Now, when you sat down, did your pants rise? Okay, so then the pants have to be longer because you got to make sure that you have the length that you need when sitting. Now, dressing someone with a seated body type is only one of many ways to dress with disabilities. Let's just say someone has autism syndrome, and they may have sensory sensitivity to all different types of fabrics, and those little tags that they put to tell us how to care for our garments, that can really be disturbing to someone with autism syndrome. So you want to make sure that you understand these things. Buttoning a button for you may be nothing, but for someone that has dexterity challenges and have arthritic flare-ups, that is incredibly difficult. And let's just take a little woman. A little woman may just want to wear stilettos to work. Nothing fancy, just regular stilettos. But she's not able to because not many brands make those shoes in her sizes. Just a few examples for you. Now, if you're wondering, how did I start on this journey in addition to being born so beautifully? I mean, you know, my feet and hands. I can tell you how. 24 years ago, I was in a pageant competition to earn money for school, and my pageant director said, "Why do you never button your left cuff?" Well, I don't know, I hadn't thought about that. I don't think about those things. And then it dawned on me, duh, I don't have a right thumb, so I never button my left cuff because it takes too long. You know those little buttons on your cuff that you have to contend with? And guys, that opened my eyes to this whole new world. It literally changed my life. And it made me see that clothing for people with disabilities just didn't exist on a large scale. What does that mean? It means that there was so much apathy in the early 90s surrounding this issue, and there were so few clothing choices. I became a bit obsessed about it. Anyone who knows me can tell you that I literally could not stop talking about it. So I couldn't just talk about it. I had to be about it. So fast forward a few years later, and what happens? I start contacting marketers of large brands, and I start saying to them, "Hey, have you ever thought about taking some of your current collection and targeting people with disabilities? Or maybe, hey, have you thought about having a pre-sold collaborative effort for people with disabilities with your brand?" We had great conversations. It lasted for about a year, but nothing came of it. And that's when I had my aha moment. You can't market to people you don't see. And you just can't see people that you don't value. And I don't mean value as human beings. I mean value as potential fashion customers. You know, in the States, we have the Americans with Disabilities Act. Yay! And it makes it mandatory for people who have wheelchairs to be able to actually have access to stores and have wheelchair-accessible dressing rooms. Yay! But there's no clothing on the floor for anyone with a seated body type. As a matter of fact, in the world, there are fewer than 5 stores, not just in the States, but in the world, with actually clothing on the floor for people with seated body types. And I'm literally not making that up. You'll be proud to know that one of those stores are right here in Canada, though. Izzy Collection does a great job. Now, in complete contrast, and I have to preface this by saying that I'm a pet lover, but we have more clothing in stores for these adorable fellows right here than we literally have for people with disabilities. I wish I was making that up. This is what started this for me, the Disability Fashion Styling System. Although I love dogs and I think they look adorable in clothes, I just needed to know that I could give a tool and provide a tool where people with disabilities would have the ability to dress with dignity, style, and self-reliance. The Disability Fashion Styling System has 3 guiding principles that, for me, act as a litmus test. And what do I mean by that? It means that the clothing has to be accessible, smart, and fashionable. Accessible, easy to put on and take off on your own, or even with a dresser. Smart, not causing any harm to the body, medically safe, and fashionable, loved by the wearer, something that fits the wearer's lifestyle and their body type. For instance, today, right now, what I'm wearing is accessible for me. It's easy to put on. There's one short zipper, but it's not a problem for me. And the thing that's really important for me with my feet is that even my pumps passed the test today. Woohoo! All pumps are not created equal, by the way. I also use the disability fashion styling system in many ways. I'm a professor at the Art Institute of California, where I teach fashion marketing. I also use it when dressing actors with disabilities. And I use it when managing Curatable. Curatable is a disability fashion lifestyle hub that features aspirational figures, I like to say. People with disabilities living their lives. Actors, tastemakers, influencers. And for me, it's important to have these figures represented because people need to know that people with disabilities can live amazing, full lives. I use Curatable to also partner to create publications and lookbooks like this that have been featured in People Magazine, Es Moda, and many other areas. I also use the Disability Fashion Styling System to manage and find the best in disability fashion styling brands. And what I mean by that, brands that are universal, that anyone could wear, or that someone can wear that has a disability. And I can say right now, guys, it's a super exciting time. We are literally everywhere. We are on Broadway. People with disabilities, they're in the movies, we're in media, everywhere. So different brands are starting to pop up all over the place. It's amazing, but it's still not enough. It's still not enough to meet this growing need. So, what do we need to do? We need to get past the barriers. And what I've noticed is over the last 24 years, there have been a number of barriers that cause us not to do this. So, barrier number one, or myth number one, as I like to say, people with disabilities, yeah, people with disabilities are all the same. No, we're not. Kathy Snow is a disability advocate and a mom of a child with a disability, and she always says, people with disabilities are people first. And I'd like to add to that, and like all people, have individual needs. Myth number two, oh, designing is just too difficult. We can't design for, are you kidding me? Look, we've had niche markets for how many decades? And although I don't like the way we describe them, we have maternity, we have plus size, petite, busty, all of this. And guys, if we can dress him, I am convinced that we can dress people with disabilities. People with disabilities can't afford it is myth number three. We don't want to go shopping. We have too many other things to focus on. Really? No one gave me that memo. But the World Health Organization says that people with disabilities, 1.3 billion people, their family and friends, 2.1 billion people, senior citizens, 650 million people with an aggregate disposable, just disposable income of $8 trillion. Meeting the fashion needs of people with disabilities is not something that we need to do because it's charitable or because it meets the SROI. It's smart business, period. It's just smart business. I saw something the other day in Business of Fashion that said, hey, hashtag, menswear is dead. What's next? I got a few suggestions for them. Guys, 24 years ago, one question changed my life, opened my eyes to this issue. And so I'd like to leave you with a question today. If you were a person with a disability, if you were a parent or loved one of a child with a disability, what would you want? And hear me. This is not about guilt or feeling bad. Come on, had my coach not brought my cuff to mind, I wouldn't be standing right here 24 years later having this conversation with you. Making sure that this happens for people is all about choice. Every day you go to your closets, you get to choose. You get to choose what you wear, when you wear, why you wear it, and how you wear it. So let's make sure that people with disabilities have the same choices. I'm encouraged by the fashion industry, but in the meantime, until they get it all right, the disability fashion styling system acts as a bridge that makes it possible for people to be empowered I'm just leaving you with this. What choice would you want?
No, we all like to look good. We all aim to dress well and look hot and sexy and fashionable. And that is no different for persons with disabilities. So I hope that some of the information Stephanie Thomas shared will be useful to you as an individual with a disability, as a parent with children or a child with a disability, as caregivers. And I would encourage you to look for these two ladies on the internet, go on YouTube, and really look, because at the end of Mrs. Thomas's presentation, there is a short fashion show where persons with various disabilities are modeling some of the clothing. So do take a look and share your thoughts with me. You can WhatsApp me, you can call VOB and leave a number or message, you can email. So here's the contact information. WhatsApp or regular call 1-246-269-9660. VOB Starcom Network, that's 1-246-430-7300. And the email address is visionsbarbados@gmail.com. That is visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And of course, you can listen to this and past episodes by going to the VOB929.com website. Look for the Visions podcast and you will see all the past episodes there, so you can take a listen to your heart's delight. So I want to say thank you very much for listening to Visions. Thank you very much for taking a position to not only advocate, but to seek to influence positive change to improve the standard of living, situations and conditions for persons with disabilities in Barbados. So until next week, when you listen to Visions again, of course, I want you to bring along your friends and families to listen. You take good care and stay safe.